Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Did I surprise you? Let's finish early. We've only got an hour. Marek was with us for an hour. So, hello, welcome to Knife Talk with myself, Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and Marek Momassi of Momassi Fire Arts. We're here with you every Monday morning for Knife Talk, the podcast for makers. Guys, how are you?
Doing all right.
Fine. Fine.
Come on, I brought the energy there.
Well, listen, I'll give you some energy. This has been a weird week. This has been a weird week. And frankly, the last few weeks, I think, you know, with what's going on in the world, you know, business has been weird. I think people are just fighting on the internet and they're not buying anything. And It's like, that's all I can come up with. I see all these people screaming at each other online. And all I can think of is you're spending too much energy screaming at each other and you're not browsing.
You're not buying stuff.
You know, so we've been over here at Fader Knives, we've been catching up on a lot of customs. We've got a lot of nice customs out the door, and we're getting ready for Christmas. Lots of inventory. We're changing up we did this thing called a wild card, which is like this section on our website where we're constantly changing out what we have on there, kind of a little weirdos and stuff like that. So we're getting ready for the wild card rotation next week, and you know, trying to just get our bearings.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, obviously, it's for you guys in the States, there's, you know, certain stuff going on, and without, I don't want to be political on this show.
Right.
We never are. But there's definitely, everything just seems to be sort of swinging a bit. You know, everything's a bit ugh. Everybody's feeling it. And I don't know whether it's the end of summer slump or whether it's just there's more going on. You know.
Well, I mean, like I said, without getting political, there's a lot of people getting screaming and hollering at each other. That's really the bottom line is like, I feel like people are just exhausted, and I see the rancor online, and especially on Facebook. It's like, I have seen three times people write, "I can't believe I'm related to you." I've seen that in three different threads. Like this post, I can't
believe.
Is that
your cousin?
It's not me. Admit, I'm just gawking. I'm a total rubber. I'm rubbernecking the situation, you know. But it's like, I mean, both sides of an argument are just like hostile, and it's like, it's depressing, frankly.
Yeah.
Depressing.
But you know what? I've been reading a bit because I'm trying to stay offline myself as well because it gets to me, and I've been reading a bit more. And I was reading, you know, these facts that, you know, our grandparents thought the same. This is the end of the world. It's terrible.
Right.
We're going to war. And then, you know, our parents thought the same, that, you know, financially there's these big crashes and it's the end of the world. I think everybody just feels this doom. But the difference is for us is that, you know, it's not just being broadcast to us, you know, once an hour.
Right.
When a news bulletin is being pushed to us every second of the day, no matter where we go, no matter where we turn. I think that's the difference. I think the world is in probably in a better state than it's ever been. But it's just that we're just getting doom pushed at us nonstop.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting because there's just like outrage at each other, and there's like it's quite depressing. So
there's no compassion anymore.
Well,
if everybody's just this juxtaposition, you know, you're either that or you're that,
right?
And it's just
Look at us straddling the fence over here, guys.
Yeah, we're not being political. But
look at us. Look at us, guys. We're fucking straddling the fence, ladies and germs. That's what you call this episode, straddling the fence.
Straddling the fence, yes.
Mareko, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a little under the weather.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just a small cold. It's not COVID or anything. But it's had me with a sore throat and a little congestion. But it's all right. This last weekend was the Dave Lish Knife Show.
How was it?
Out in Yum, Washington. It was great. It was great to hang out with a lot of friends. Dave had on. So the show is on a Saturday, and so on Friday he has like a little kind of mini hammer in, kind of like what you've done in the past, Jeff. Actually, where people kind of just get together. There's food and there's like some demonstration. Mostly for knife makers. There's a few collectors that show up, and some fun competition. Like last year, he did a shootout with 22 pistol or rifles, and then this year he did a tomahawk blackjack. So you had a bunch of cards stapled to stumps, and you had to throw a tomahawk to get your hand.
Oh, and that's cool.
Yeah, super fun. I won.
Oh, look at you. What was your number? How hard did you get?
I got two blackjacks in a row.
Dang, oh, look at you.
Jack ace and a king ace.
Look at
top
you.
Of the shop.
Dead eye dick.
Yeah, that's me.
No, that's what they call it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Really? Dead eye dick.
Anyways, I won a tomahawk, and that was fun. And then after the show, and then the show was on Saturday, and you know, there's just Nick Anderson, Josh Prince, Jaden Smisky, like all these great makers, Rich Patterson, Luke Delmeyer, just tons of great people hanging out and cruising and making music. And like both the evenings we ended up sitting around and playing guitar and singing songs together. Salem Straub was on the guitar, just killing it. But yeah, it was a good time. And then Jaden, actually, Smisky, he and I have been talking for a long time about him coming and hanging out and working with me and just kind of hanging at the shop. And so because he was here in town for the show, we did a few days of hanging after the show and just kind of did some work in the shop on some different approaches to mosaic Damascus pattern welding and the way I approach pattern welding, and I think it was cool for him and made an interesting pattern. And I had a really interesting interaction. I don't know if interesting is the right word. Yeah.
Sounds bad. I had one too. Let's go.
Yeah. So well, and I think, and it might be a longer discussion around more than anything, like etiquette.
Ooh.
Around like I guess making content around other people's work.
Ooh,
without talking to them. I've been playing with this gradient stuff for a long time, and kind of the backstory of the gradient pattern elements, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with what I'm talking about, but if you look at Gabe Fletcher's work, he's really, like, after working with him, he's really taken the gradient element and he's really kind of ran with it, and he's making wild patterns that are really have like a greater sense of depth to them. But the gradient started with me and Peter Swarsberg back at Dragon's Breath Forge. It kind of was like a conceptual idea. Like, he and I were hanging out in the office. We always would talk patterns and woots and stuff like that. And I was like, how cool would it be to create an element that had kind of like a gradient to it that added some depth in like in a 2D, like a platform or whatever,
right?
You know, to add some depth to the steel. And we talked about it in different ways that one might approach it. And then he proved what the prevailing concept, I guess. And he made a gradient and it looked fucking awesome. And then he didn't do too much. He made an axe, he made a kiridashi, and I think he did something with a sword. And then about a year later, I started playing with it for a random pattern that I was making for customers, or maybe a couple of years later, actually. Random pattern that I was making for a customer's order to try to create a greater sense of depth and topographical like appearance, like on a map or something like that. And then after that, I just started playing with it and a lot more. And then from there, I've been teaching classes. I talk about it in classes, and I've worked doing 101s. And so recently, a fellow maker who I'm connected with. Like, we have messages and stuff like that, and I've been following his work. He follows me. He posted a video basically showing how to make that pattern, and it's, you know, I share a lot, but I don't share everything. And and it's because, more than anything, like, often, like the coffee process, like, I, before I put kind of like a codified process for doing the coffee etch, I messed with it for like a year and a half, not to like hide it from anybody, but just like I wasn't getting very consistent results. And even after coming up with a process that got more consistent results, is still the struggle. And I've gotten to a point now where I get really great results, but that's an example of like sitting on something before sharing it.
Right.
It's more about trying to get it dialed in.
Yeah.
And so with this gradient element, I was wanting to do more work with it, and I've been wanting to do more pattern stuff, which I've started doing. And then somebody comes out of left field, basically, and makes a video around how to do a process that is what I feel like is kind of like my intellectual property, kind of in a way. And what the difficult thing is that, because of, like I said, I'm connected with this person. I've met them and talked to them before in the past, in real life, as well as online. And they kind of circumvented me in regards to getting information as to how to make that pattern, and then turned around and made a video around how to make that and publish it publicly. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Because
do they reference you in the video?
So here's the deal. Yeah, they do reference me, but again, they never, because I teach and show so much stuff, you know, I had my pattern modeled Wednesdays, right. I got lots of posts where I show stuff, I expect people to take those things that I share publicly and use them. And I'm honestly, like, I'm curious to see how other people use them, but I wasn't ready to share the gradient just yet.
Right.
And they published this without ever talking to me. And they
Christopher
do get...
Columbus Jr. This is Christopher Columbus Jr. shit, dude. This is, happens all the time.
So yeah. So he does reference me and give me credit in the video a few times. But what's frustrating is that he never once tried to reach out to me about sharing that publicly before putting a whole fucking video together about it.
Fucking bullshit.
So I was like super fucking heated on the first day that I found out about it. And then talking to a few makers, I kind of came down off the edge of the fucking roof and I calmed down. And then, and I ended up reaching out and chatting with the guy. And I thought we came to an understanding about attribution. Cause really, like, that's all we can really do, right?
Right.
Is we can. If we take inspiration or we're inspired by or influenced by other people's work, the best we can do is attribute inspiration or influence, because none of us, not myself or anybody, makes knives in a fucking vacuum. Nobody's in a void saying, oh, you know what? I need to make something sharp and slicey. So, all we can do is, and none of us are like, I've had people tell me, oh, you should go and patent your designs and stuff, your Damascus designs. And it's like, I don't have the fucking money or the time to do that. The best I can hope for is people to show a professional courtesy and say, hey, this is the pattern I made. It was inspired by so-and-so's work. That's it. Right. Mm-hmm. And he does that in the video. But the thing, again, he's taking something that he intentionally kind of found through somebody else, my process, and then posting it, and that was really frustrating. And then, like I said, I thought we came to an understanding, and then the next day he posts a knife that not only is the pattern that a pattern that I designed and pioneered, but the knife looks like a fucking clone of one of my chef's knives, and there's no mention anywhere on there. I'm just like, what happened? I thought we just talked about this. And so I don't know how I'm feeling right now. I'm trying not to be too pissed off, but at the same time, like, there's only, like, what I have no protections around my ideas legally speaking. And so, like, what the fuck can you do? Except for...
This is a fucking good one, dude. This is a good one.
It's a tricky spot.
And you're not alone. You're not alone.
No, I'm sure I'm not.
And the problem is this is the... This is that whole dilemma when people start calling other people gatekeepers. You know,
sure.
They get mad because you won't tell anybody anything. Well, you won't. Most of these old guys won't tell anything because they get ripped off. You know,
sure.
So it gets to the point where you have to say to yourself, "Well, is this the cost of doing business,
right.
or am I just going to have to figure out a way to accept it? Because obviously, you didn't do any contracts with people." You were hoping, and here's the reason why you're a good guy. You're a good guy because you just expect that people are going to behave the way you behave. And that's an unreasonable expectation. You can't expect people to do the right thing because you think you would do the right thing.
Yeah.
Craig, what do you think?
Yeah, it is a difficult one because I think particularly with Mareko, you're very open with sharing your...
Right.
Your ideas, anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think initially I'd probably give the guy the benefit of the doubt and then have a chat with him like you did.
Yeah.
But then he goes on to do other stuff, which is really a shithead thing to do. But yeah, I can see how others might think, oh, Mareko would be fine with this because, you know, he shares everything. It's fine. But then to not sort of, you know, there's messaging you and there's crediting you. They're both very different things, isn't it? You know?
Sure.
And I think... crediting you, and if he is crediting you, they should certainly be speaking with you and saying, you know, is this okay? And then, yeah, that conversation is to have there. Well, no, because it's a work in progress, you know?
Yeah.
And is that how it was presented, as a work in progress, or was it...
No, it's a full-on finished piece.
Oh, right.
And that's the that's the thing that's tricky about it, is like that the gradient element is actually kind of, like, once you understand it, is a very simple thing to make. But the implications of what it can do and how it can change patterns, like, it's going to be a fucking game changer for... I mean, just look at Gabe Fletcher's work. Like, it's going to be a fucking game changer in regards to how people start designing and making patterns. And rather than me kind of having control over my intellectual property in regards to how it's presented and put out into the world, because I did have long-term plans to put it out there and share it. I just wasn't ready yet. And then without talking to me, this guy put it out there. And so now it feels like it's kind of out of my control. And again, like I share a lot of stuff, but I feel like I have the right to decide how my work is put out there. I don't know. It's like well, somebody like ripping off the lyrics or the beat to music or so, like, I don't know. And
here's an interesting...
Tricky. It's a tricky situation.
You know who... I talked to Pat Quinn a lot from the Center for Metal Arts, and he's really kind of revolutionized a lot of forging processes.
Yeah.
He is very, very, very concerned with his work being, you know, going out in the world, or his techniques going out and somebody just kind of ripping him off. Like, he's incredibly... I've been down there doing that for years, and he developed this style of forging an anvil. Which is hasn't been seen in 100 years plus. Yeah. And he didn't want me to... I was like, I got to take a picture. He's like, don't share it. I'm like, you got it. No problem.
Yeah.
And it was because he's like, I have made hammers. There are hammer guys who have made hammers, and then other people just take the hammers and they take the designs and they don't give credit and they just kind of steal it and take it and they do their thing. There are other people who say, I know in my situation, I've designed a couple things that I've stopped making completely because guys will take it and then they'll say, oh, this design's, you know, it was out there, so you don't own it. So, but why should I protect some sort of... I can make money. You know, or I'm not taking money out of your pocket. There's plenty of, you know, people out in the world.
Sure.
And it gets to the point where you either have to... You have to say, okay, well, I'm very generous. I mean, you're very generous with your information, or you're going to have to say, or you're going to have to go Pat Quinn and say, I'm not showing anything because I don't want it to be stolen.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I think, like I said, long-term, my plan was to share it, but I think it's just, it's feeling like the choice has been taken from me in regards to how my, it's something that I've developed and spent time developing and figuring out is being distributed out there into the world. Like, if we had had a conversation, and he said that he was a, and I don't know if it's because of knife talk, but he said he was afraid to reach out to me, which was kind of perplexing to me because we have met and chatted in real life. We have a message thread going on Instagram. And so I'm like, dude, you're talking about taking somebody else's process, replicating it, and publishing it publicly without their permission.
Right.
Like, if he had reached out to me to have had a conversation, I'd be like, listen, I'm not ready to share that yet. But when I am, how about I come down and we do a video together and we make it together and we do this? Like, that would have been a complete, and giving me like some sense of ownership of my own shit and some control over it, because there's plenty of other things that this guy can be making videos about. There's tons of things. And he's very curious about that process, which is understandable and fair. But at the same time, it's not his to fucking share. It's not.
Can we do a little quick KTP GPT?
Let's hear it.
KTP GPT is when we hear something and then we analyze it. When he said he was afraid to share it, afraid to contact you, that is not even that subliminal. Not even that, you know, he was afraid because he knew he was in the wrong.
He knew he wasn't doing,
I don't know about wrong. He knew in his heart that it was a dicey situation. Yeah. That it wasn't 100, he knew that it wasn't like a nothing situation.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know, man.
Well, that's what adds frustration because we're connected. I'm like, it feels like you intentionally sidestepped me because you wanted to make content around this process without me potentially saying no. But the fact of the matter remains that it's mine to make that choice, and you've taken that choice away.
And not just content by reading what I've just read, that it was actually, they've sold it as well. You know, it was...
Dude,
he's making money off.
There was a kid who watched all my stuff and then he made... The one of my laminated handles, it looked identical to one of my knives, and then he posted about it, and then he tagged all these chefs to sell it, and it was like it wasn't, and he was acting like Christopher Columbus. This is Christopher Columbus Jr. time. There's so many people who like plant the flag of their own originality, and it's like, and they sidestep a degree of decorum. You know,
yeah.
I'll tell you something for me. And when I started doing friction folders, I watched what a lot of people were doing and I really wanted to make it my own. So the friction folders that I make, that I teach down at the Center for Metal Arts, I really tried to go out of my way to make sure that my process and the way I was making these knives were different than other people making forged friction folders.
Yeah.
And then I made it also the conscious decision to realize if I'm going to teach this class, I have to allow people to just do whatever the hell they want. So once in a while, one good kid said to me, he's like, I really want to take this class because I want to teach this to my students. And I had to make the point, like, you take the class and I give you my notes, I show you how to do it, and I get you squared away, I can't stop you from doing it. In my mind, it's like, if you support the Center for Metal Arts, you support me in this class, go ahead, do whatever the hell you want. But I had to make it very, like, almost distance myself from it as a teaching process and not something part of my business.
Yeah, and that's another element to it, is like, I've taught this, like, people are paying me their hard-earned money in private lessons or in group classes to learn this stuff. And essentially, you are kind of sidestepping that.
Right.
And then turning around and putting it out there publicly. And essentially, you're kind of taken away from a way that I earn a living through my teaching by just putting it out there publicly.
Mm.
And it's extremely frustrating. And I think, unfortunately, there really isn't much to do about it. I think part of the reason I just wanted to talk about it on the podcast, and I know we've talked about this kind of stuff before, but I was like, a professional courtesy is really important in regards to, like, especially if you think you're going to try to teach somebody else's shit. Like, one of the first times I did a private lesson.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly.
made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quicksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The guy Todd also does private lessons, and he just turned around and started teaching all my shit. And I'm like, you didn't pay me for the rights to teach this stuff. You're paying to learn. But at the same time, like you're saying, like you can't control what people do outside of that. But again, you think there would be like a level of professionalism.
In the situation for me, the guy who's before he took the class, he said, "How do you feel about me teaching this?" And he gave me the professional courtesy, "This is my plan." Right. And yeah. I said, "Go ahead," you know, because yeah. I had to figure out a way to separate myself from them.
Yeah.
Had to. Because yeah, otherwise, I'd be like you. I actually would probably be crazier than you, frankly. Totally.
Well, I was like, very grumpy the first day, to say the least.
You have every right. This is the problem with these. This is the problem with the level of the type of business that we're at, where we're, you know, imagine being a restaurant where you figure out a hamburger and then the guy next door to you.
Everybody does it.
It yeah. does the fucking same idea. Thing. I mean, yeah, it's yeah. like it's, you know, I almost feel as though, especially with there's a couple guys who just kind of ripped me off. And look, I get messages from friends of mine saying, oh, you know, this guy's, you know, the whole ripping me off thing happens. And yeah. and the problem is we're not at the level now where we can strike with fucking lawyers. We're just going to have to, I mean, unless we figure something out, you either got to hold it close to your vest.
Yeah.
And I remember one time you made something at the shop here and you said to me, don't post about it. We're still working it out. And I was like, okay, no problem. You know, you've always been very clear about like being very clear about trying to protect your stuff until it's ready to go. I feel as though some people are desperate and some people don't have a sense and some people don't understand the value. Here's another example. When I was working with Lynn Ray on his X-ray knives, and I helped him do a watercolor that I gave it to him. I gave him the watercolor to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how to make it. We were on the phone for a long time and figured these things out. And I made a couple. And then at one point, Tony says, oh, it'd be great if we added something like that to, you know, what we do. And I said, I don't want to do that. This ain't mine. I don't really feel comfortable doing that. I feel like I'm strong enough as someone who can be a designer that I can come up with something on my own. But it was like, it was really like, you know, there was definitely this moment of just like, well, what's the right thing to do? And sure, it's sure. like, I wouldn't, you know, I think your move is going to have to be to kind of be a little bit more holding it closer to the vest.
Yeah. And well, and one of the people I talked to was Steve Schwarzer. Because he's been in the fucking game for fucking ever. I think longer than I've been alive. God damn it. But anyways. he was like,
flying planes then and winning Mr.
yeah,
World exactly. competition.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's Jeez. Right.
Yeah. He was basically like, listen, you're an incredible talent. And you can't get too twisted up about this. Because this is what people who lack, I guess, maybe a certain level of creativity will do. That's all they got. Where you can continue to come up with new stuff all the time. Huh? It's just, I think the thing that just really frustrates me is, like, I really feel like this approach with the gradient is really going to change the way people make Damascus patterns, and like, it's going to change the way people, like, commercial manufacturers are making Damascus patterns, just to create an extra level of depth and texture to the steel. And it's going to be, and
so this is a good one. This was a really good one. This is going to be a tough one to top, is what you're saying.
Well, not a tough. It's an accessible way to level up your patterns in a pretty big, like tenfold.
Did you talk to Jamie Lindell about this?
No. Why?
I just figured maybe reach out to him and see what he says about the whole situation.
No, I haven't talked to Jamie in a bit. I should connect with him, but yeah, no, it's just frustrating because Dennis Tyrell was here taking a class, and then he was planning on possibly doing a video, and then I caught wind of it before he got to it, and I was like, and I did that exact thing that I reached out and I was like, hey, I'm still sitting on that, but maybe in a few months we can get together. I'll come down and work with you. And we can make a video around it, and that would be cool. And now this guy, again, like, this guy just, like, put this video out, and it's like, fuck, dude, it's not even yours, and you're just like, whatever. Like, yeah, at a certain point, it's like, it's shitty, but what the fuck can I actually do about it? And but just, like, fucking flail around and yell into the fucking sky.
Well, I think there's a lot of takeaways. I think that's good. And I always get pissed. I don't want to get too into what happened to me a couple years ago in regards to that, just because it'll be very easy to kind of figure out who it was. But I had to expel this design, and then just be like, all right, well, that if I can't, I have to use this to try to be more creative. And I have to use this to be like, all right, that's the reason why I started doing all the laminated scales, because I was just like, I gotta figure out ways in which just to not get ripped off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Same thing with I did a thing, and it was my own fault. I did a quick video on how I do serrated knives, yeah, based off of what I learned with you. You and I worked out together, Mareko, and then me changing things up and using, you know, actually, you know, railing patterns and how I used to, you know, mark out railings. And a guy did a Christopher Columbus video on serrated knives, and it was just like, you little bastard, you. They come over there and wring your ass, your fucking neck. So, it sucks, dude. Sorry, man.
No, it's just frustrating.
Well, maybe we should start solving other people's problems now.
Let's do it.
Should we give it a go? Well, first off, I mean, if you've got a problem with your heat treat, you know what you need?
Knife Talk is sponsored by Even Heat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
That'll solve your problems. Okay, questions?
Yeah, I'm looking at... Mareko sent me the thing. Yeah, this is...
I got a question right now.
It's a pretty egregious dude.
Okay.
Give me a fucking break, dude.
Well, and it's questions. Like, I was laughing when I saw one of the posts, and I was like, we were just talking about the concern of AI and automated systems, like cloning somebody else's work. And we got to worry about each fucking chother.
Yeah. So, look, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got a question for us, send us a DM or a voice message. And we have a voice message from a...
Oh, shit. That's right.
Momassi Fire Arts. He has a question. Take it away.
What?
You just said you had a question, Mareko. I was setting you up.
Oh, I was ready to read one of the questions from the list. Oh.
We do. I have an audio question.
Oh, fuck.
Well, let's forget it. Hold it. Listen, this is great. This is a great opportunity because you can send in your audio messages, and we got a great one from our man, Ty Ming. Ty Ming is everything, is
perfect
our
timing.
Guy. Love timing. Timing. He's our guy.
Hey, this is Ty. You guys get a lot of calls about people wanting to go full-time into knife making and kind of pivoting from whatever they do currently. And I thought you guys could talk about your own pivoting into knife making, but also maybe pivoting out of knife making, whether it's, you know, going to become an artist or a mosaic teacher or rock star. Thanks.
Timing. Timing is everything. He's
what happened
the man.
At the end of that then?
Somebody screamed in the back. He lives in Washington Heights. You never know.
Small child being slaughtered.
No, he lives in Washington Heights. Could be a problem out in those streets. Out in those streets.
Timing is everything.
Timing is everything. Got to follow TYMINGIS. Oh, isn't everything. Timing isn't everything. Let's go follow Timing. He's our guy.
Okay.
So the transitioning question was, in and transitioning out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get that a lot, don't we, about when do you go full-time? And I suppose we can, the three of us, just briefly talk about how we got there, I suppose. For me, a bit of a crazy story where I wasn't really doing anything for a long time. I'd sold a business and I was sort of looking for stuff to do, and I went down sort of rabbit holes of what I wanted to be doing. And I came across a Walter Sorrell's video and making a knife, and I was just like, oh, I'd like to try that. And first of all, I got a blade and I made a handle for it. I was like, okay, let's maybe try the next step. And then I made a blade, and then this podcast is basically the reason I really got into it, because then I was just like, well, as I always am when I'm into something, I want to know as much as I can about it. And I thought, well, everybody's doing podcasts. Why don't I do a podcast and interview people who know exactly how to do it? And I'll just glean information from them. And that's what I did. And then before I know it, I was making more and more knives, and I was getting orders coming in and that kind of thing. Very sort of unorthodox the way I got into it, I suppose. And getting out of it, I suppose it's a very similar thing. Getting into something else, and me and my sort of tunnel vision of that's all that matters now. And putting all my efforts into something different. But I mean, I still make knives. I mean, it's very much a hobby for me now. It's certainly not my career anymore. Very much a hobby. And I'm enjoying it now more than I probably ever did. But yeah, it's very unorthodox for me, the way I got in and I suppose out is very, very different. But Mareko, we all know the story as well. And actually, there's probably a full blast episode of... Certainly, I know I did one with Jeff, and I think Mareko, you've done one as well, haven't you?
Well, seeing how in the beginning of Knife Talk, did it in an interview for both Jeff and myself.
I did, actually.
Let's just do a quickie. Quick in and out, you know what I mean?
Don't touch the sides.
Hey, baby, watch out. Watch out.
It's nothing but sides.
Hey!
Okay. Anyways, I got my start working for Bob Kramer. I met him while I was working in a restaurant washing dishes and prepping, and a friend of mine who started working for him introduced me to him, because I was at a place in my life where I was kind of lost, and I was, 24 years old, no direction, school was not my thing, and so I was... in my mind, I was like, cool, I'm just going to be kind of like a semi-loser most of my life.
Oh, boy.
And
what a fucking... Put that on your resume.
Yeah.
Semi-loser. Not even a full loser.
Not even good enough to be a full-on loser.
A half-ass loser.
Half-ass
not even a full-ass loser.
That's the new title of the episode. But anyways, so she introduced me to Bob. And Bob was looking for somebody to help in his shop. And I was kind of at a loss as to what I was doing with my life at the time. And so he offered me a chance to work in the shop, and I started working in there. And I worked for him for 3 years. Turns out I'm pretty good at knife making. And that's kind of how I got my start. And then later on down the road, I stopped working for Bob. I was back in restaurants and working in food, but knife making was calling me, and I had to find a way to get back into it, because at the time I was single. I didn't have a lot of responsibilities financially speaking, no family, no house payment and all that kind of shit. And so I was able to get started making knives while requiring very little overhead or having very little overhead. That's definitely changed over the years, but yeah, that's how I was able to get into it full time.
And how are you going to get out? Is that the question?
We're answering both sides of it.
Why not?
Yeah. Okay. So.
Or we can round robin. You could give the beginning and then we can switch around. Your call.
Well, I'll just finish it up. Yeah. So over the years, I've struggled with burnout actually quite a bit because I've been making knives now for 15 years. And I've kind of been making the same style knife. I have explored, obviously lots of different pattern styles and techniques. And that's where I think I really strive. Like I'm very good at the blade grinding, handle sculpting, forging, all this stuff. But the pattern welding designs is where I really thrive. But if I'm going to make a living, I still got to finish out knives, at least with my current model, make knives, sell knives. And I've been doing that for a long time, and I've really struggled with it, especially in regards to burnout. And I have thought about the idea of getting a like kind of a conventional job, working 9 to 5 somewhere and doing the knives on the side, because the burnout has really been that fucking real. And honestly, in regards to like figuring out a retirement plan and health insurance and coverage and stuff like that is really tricky when you are a self-employed knife maker. And some of the people who I admire, actually, how they've navigated this knife making game as a professional knife maker, most of them have had full-time, like regular 9 to 5 jobs, or not regular, but like a day job. Mike Quesenberry is a great example of that. Who just recently retired in the last couple of years. He's a train engineer, and he did that for several years, and he did the knives on the side, and he just took his time making really incredible knives, and now he's full on retired, and he's got all the pension, and he's got all of the stuff that you get from being retired, and then he still gets to play and make knives and sell knives on the side, while navigating the retired life, and I actually just fucking like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was just like, wow, I don't know how realistic this knife making thing is as a full-time gig is because of, you know, the fluctuation of the market. Because we realistically are making luxury items. We're not making anything that anybody actually needs. The markets can fluctuate have pretty dramatic swings when you are not an essential product or maker of things, and that kind of that insecurity has kind of started to stress me out a little bit, and especially in regard like we're having a kid and thinking about their healthcare and their and any kind of retirement that I might be able to build up or put away and save for myself or for them. It's like it's not really built in. There's no knife makers union. I don't know what it would take to make a knife makers union.
You could get that guy. You could if you was in a union, we could send off a steward. You could send a steward off to file a complaint.
Cease and desist. Get fucked. And so, yeah. And bargaining rights, obviously, for, you know, whatever. Negotiating shit, but whatever unions do. But yeah, I don't know. It's tricky, man. And I honestly have very seriously thought about, because of the physical aspect of the work, I've really struggled with the physical aspect of the work, which is why I've started doing more teaching, is to take my earning off of my body. And just talking and doing seminars and teaching people. And that has been a difficult thing over the years. And that's actually something that's... The physical aspect has been something that I've really been thinking about and taking in consideration in regards to how I continue moving forward. Because, like, do I get a day job? So I'm only doing knife making a little bit on the side just because physically I can't really... I struggle with it. But at the same time, like, what kind of fucking day job am I going to be doing anyway? So I'm like, I'm probably still going to be doing some sort of physical labor of some sort. And so, I don't know, maybe I just figure out a program for taking better care of my body, so that I can just keep doing the knife making. Plus, there's also a lot of flexibility that's lost when I'm, you know, if I start working for somebody else versus myself. I don't know. There's a lot of things to take into consideration. Obviously, I haven't made that transition or done anything about that yet, but it's definitely something I've contemplated, especially recently.
I don't blame you.
Sure.
It's good. It's good that you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing is like For me, I come from a family of small business owners. My dad was a small business owner. My sisters were all both small business owners. Yeah. They're pretty kind of like used to kind of growing up in a family of artists, but also small business owners that had a design background. So this is like kind of almost for me, it feels, you know, relatively comfortable. I almost feel like there's a degree of... I remember my dad's winery and my sister's bookstore and my other sister's contracting, and I always used to go from them, especially in the summers, and work with them. And I feel as though there's like a home. This it feels like home a little bit. So like have dealing with customers and dealing with your employees. And this is a, I kind of grew up in this kind of world. So I have a better feeling for it.
Yeah.
And I think that the direction of my business is just as a knife company is different than yours. Like, I don't even know if you call yourself a knife company, you know?
No.
You're like, you're a bladesmith. I mean, I see Fader Knives as a knife company. And I can separate myself out from it. And if I were to have an opportunity for every time we get a question once in a while saying, what would you do in your free time if you had nothing better to do? I would not make a knife. It wouldn't interest me. I mean, maybe something I haven't done before, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, it's not at the top of my list of things that I would do. So for me, this is a job and I love it. And I love the difficulties of it. I love the ideas, you know, I love the business end of it, and I love the construction end of it. And it's just, you and I have just totally different upbringings and different directions we want to take. I started out, I was a sculptor, and then I was a metal worker, and I made custom furniture for restaurants and people. And then I ended up going to the culinary school, and I ended up working for a restaurateur. And then I got back into sculpture, and then I lost my studio, and then I got a job as a blacksmith at the Center for Metal Arts, you know, 15 years ago or something like that. Maybe, no, more than 15, probably like, Lila was one, so probably like 18, 19 years ago. And then I really got used to being a fabricator and then making sculpture on the side. And then I left, and I worked for another fabrication shop, and then I ended up helping teach some knife making classes for bladesmithing, and I thought I can do this, and I was forging knives, and then I kind of transitioned into making culinary knives. And it was, for me, the reason why I went full time is I was working as a carpenter for a person, and there were promises made that didn't come through at all, like not even close. And I was kind of thrust into unemployment, and I'd already been making knives. And I thought, well, you know, it's sink or swim. And so I went with it. And then I pretty quickly decided that I'm terrible at business, and I got to fortify my business and bringing in a business partner who I used to run a restaurant with 25 years ago. So, like, I wanted this to work bad, and I kind of did a lot of investing in time and energy. And giving away a lot of, you know, property, you know, I don't completely own Fader Knives. So I had to, in order to get, you know, this thing going, I had to make sure that I had a business partner who has a part ownership.
Right.
I love this business, and I feel, you know, even when things are weird, things are still kind of interesting, a lot of problem solving. And then getting out, I will for sure just make sculpture. I want to do something where it's just me and I'm making something by myself, and I don't have to have business meetings, and I don't have to talk to, I can just go in and just do what I want. It's the hardest part now for me when I try to make sculpture in the shop is if somebody's here. Like, you feel very, very, vulnerable. So if someday I want to just make sculpture, you know, and then that would be great. Mm. Maybe teach, maybe, I don't know, but make sculpture for sure.
Yeah. Making sculpture to sell or just because you need to make sculpture?
I tell you what, the sculpture I've been making, I've been making because I want to make it, and I don't even think about selling it. And that has been, and that is part of it. It came on the death of my sister, she died a month ago. And she was a great sculptor. And I really, you know, talking to her, my other sister, and talking about her experience as a sculptor and why she stopped and why she, it really kind of made me just want to make sculpture for the sake of making sculpture the way my sister used to make sculpture. Yeah. So like, if I make sculpture, it's going to be because I want to make it. And then, you know, I have like, I've, since my sister died, I made 4 little sculptures that are in the house, and I don't really have any, you know, no thoughts of having to sell any of it.
Yeah. So. And I think that relates back to the original question of, you know, when does this become full-time? So, assuming that if it's not full-time for you, it's more of a hobby. And I think the pressures that come when it becomes your job, and then you're not making what you want to make. You're making something with a... You're making something commercially. You're making something that people will want. Mm-hmm. And it's something, you know, even as a band now, me and my band, we've been talking about this a lot this week. Of, you know, certain songs that we really love, but like what that really couldn't be the next release because it's not really sort of commercial, you know. And it's a different kind of sort of, it puts a pressure on you. So if you are in that situation where you're a hobby maker and you've still got a job that pays your bills, I mean, you may well hate that job. You may be looking for any way to get out of the job, and I completely understand that. But I think it's not, the grass is always greener. I think once you're doing something commercially, that pressure really does pile on, and it's a very different thing. And you can quite easily lose the enjoyment of what you may love doing now. So that's something to consider as well, you know.
I think it's also mental. I mean, in terms of your direction. Like, what is the satisfaction that you're getting? You know, me, I can, you know, I understand burnout. Perfect example. Today I was kind of bummed out. Something's going on and everybody's fine. But my daughter's really having a hard time with the death of my sister. They were very, very close. And even a month later, you know, she was in a rough shape last night. We had a long conversation. I got bummed out. And then what the fuck's going on in the world is bumming me out. And it's like, it's just, it feels as though there will never, you know, we will never truly come together. And, you know, it got me depressed this morning. So I was super depressed when I left. And something else happened. Oh, yeah, I broke the fucking side mirrors on my sister's car that my daughter's having. So I got to replace those. And I felt guilty because regardless, who cares? So I was, this morning, I wouldn't say I was depressed. I would say I was blue. And then what I decided to do is just fucking go to work. And I had a plan of what I wanted to get done. I put my head down. I did the things I had to get done. And then that kind of work without having to think too much was the balm.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good question from Time 8.
I mean, we're nearly an hour in. We've done one question.
Good. There's less work I have to do.
Timing. Right, let me tell everybody all about TexasFarrierSupply.com. If you need anything, if you're a knife maker and you need stuff, we all need stuff, go to Texas Farrier Supply to get your stuff, including Indasa RhinoWet. Because if you're hand sanding, which we all need to do, unfortunately, I mean, maybe you enjoy it, but it'll be a lot more enjoyable with Indasa RhinoWet because it just makes it easier, makes it quicker, and therefore cheaper. So head on over to TexasFarrierSupply.com, load up your basket, get some Indasa RhinoWet and use Knife Talk 10 at checkout and get 10% off. 10% at TexasFireSupply.com.
We have listener feedback and questions.
Let's do a feedback. Let's mix it up, eh?
Guys, listen to me. If you want to send us a message, which we all have. Oh, by the way, big news. Number one is you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, and that's where you can send us your message. And number two is I was talking to STP Custom Knives, who had the Louisiana Custom Knife Show. Remember that? I've been talking about it. Well, there was the STP Knives had an award, and if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram this Monday, the award is for the best chef's knife that went to. I don't know who it went to. It went to Chris Jones of Steel Dog Knives, and it is the Knife Talk podcast-sponsored best kitchen knife. So we sponsored an award. It will be on the Knife Talk podcast on Instagram. Congratulations, STP Knives. Thank you all for all your kind words, and we're glad to have been involved in this great thing. All right, so last couple weeks we've been talking about farmers markets and markets and shows and going to Blade Show if you're a knife maker. Do you want to answer the Mareko's question there, Craig? Should he?
Yeah, I'm on it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So J Mod Knives has sent us a message. He does a lot of farmers markets, and here's what he has to say. Hey guys, all this farmer market talk, I figured I'd chime in. My greatest advice on knife makers setting up a person at a market to sell is making sure the people who are going to be attending have a lot of money. It doesn't matter if you're an event full of chefs or people who hunt. If they don't have money, it's really hard to make sales. Do your research and maybe look up how much the homes sell for in that particular area and figure out if they will have the loot. Keep up the amazing podcast. Hmm. Cheers. So...
yeah, I suppose that. Yeah, I suppose that's an idea.
Figure it out.
Making sure you're in a sort of affluent area, and yeah, yeah, it sort of makes sense.
Well,
yeah.
He's definitely in the Phoenix area, right?
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's a good move.
But he also does it. He does it all the time.
Yeah.
The key is like it's not you got it. It's a consistency.
Yeah.
We learned that last week from Knives by Nooch. Opal Knives. We were talking about this. Opal Knives was looking to get a doer for liquid nitrogen.
Yes,
and they were opening, they were afraid the opening was too small, and this is great feedback from Opal Knives. We were just saying this is what he does. He says, with regards to liquid nitrogen, this is Opal Knives, the liquid nitrogen doers have small openings. I recently met a cleaver that was too tall to fit my doer, and I had to have a wider wider necked doer. I bought an old styrofoam cooler from a yard sale for $3. I simply poured liquid nitrogen out of the doer and right in the cooler, and I lowered the knife into the rest of the bottom, and it worked great. After a couple minutes, the liquid nitrogen will calm down and the evaporation will slow, and you can see that in the cooler. The only thing I'll add is too much. I added too much to the cooler. So definitely wasted a liter or two. I know the next time I'll only pour in a little bit. So that's the move. If you have... Yeah, so I mean that's a great idea, especially the guy last week was saying he was paying like $2 a liter or something like that. Hmm. Yeah, fucking get a cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
Get to the cooler.
I see. So store it in the doer, but when you need to use it on a big knife, you have a secondary container to put the liquid nitrogen.
Put
in
the cooler.
Put in the cooler.
Put it the cooler. That's the best. That's the best. We have a lot of there's a lot of Magna Cartas in this situation.
But right. Okay.
Let's go back to the guys. Do me a favor. Condense your writing down. I'm begging you, please. Don't send the Magna Carta. Most people send the long one and then they'll write sorry for the Magna Carta. Don't be sorry. Just edit
Just
yourself.
Don't do it.
Just put it in the cooler.
Okay, let's do questions. DB Custom Knives. DB _ Custom Knives. Question for the pod. How do you politely tell those who want to be knife reviewers to fuck off? So those who want to review your knives, contacting you, maybe on Instagram or on some sort of social platform,
right.
They say, hey, if you send me a knife, I'd review it for you. How do you politely tell them to fuck off?
Go ahead, Mareko.
Yeah, I think, you could just tell him to fuck off, but I don't know if that's necessarily the best move. It might be more maybe diplomatic to say something to the effect of, say thank you and you're flattered by their interest, but that is not currently part of your business model, something to that effect.
But you could say it in a way that's not so, you could say it like, sorry, I can't do that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Oh, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? What are they going to do?
That's make polite. Them... What's in it for me, bitch?
Well, that's what you quite say. True, isn't it? It's quite true. And I think any sort of collaboration.
Hey, fuckface.
I think that question
what's
needs to be up front.
Me?
What's in it for me?
What's in it for me, fuckface?
You know, a collaboration ideally works for both parties, you know? So I don't think there's anything wrong in saying, well, what do I get out of this? I know that's rude. Or just have to fuck off, really, because there's nothing in it for you. Really isn't.
Well, if you think about it from a commercial standpoint, like any kind of influence, like a company that's looking to work with an influencer, which essentially these reviewers are positioning themselves as an influencer of some sort.
Yeah.
They're ideally should be getting thousands of views. And then based on the value of whatever you're trying to advertise, like if we get, I mean, we're not going to get into sales funnel shit, but essentially it should, this should even out. And if it's not there, then don't do it. And I think too, like there are people who've reached out to me in the past and they're like, I would love to review your, or I would love to get one of your knives. I'd love to review it. And I'm like, I have more people following me than you. What do you think you're going to do for me that I can't already do for myself?
Yeah, bitch. What? Yeah, fuck face.
Or even people who are like, I'd love to help you build your Instagram. I'm like,
yeah, fuck you, have, you, bitch.
You got 531 people following you.
Fuck how the,
you
here.
Can't you can't even do it for yourself. What are you going to do for
here.
Me?
Fuck out of here. I'm walking here. Get up. Hey, fuck out of here. Fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's quite true.
But you know, I think go ahead.
Those people are just blanketing people. They're just hitting thousands of people and saying the same thing. They probably haven't even looked at your work. They've just seen, you know,
it's not
a potential, you know, where they could make money out of you.
But they're not always bad. I mean, I've had good relationships with people that we've sent knives to, and I've had lame ones. Like when we had our PR company, they had me sending stuff all over the place. Oh, we sent a knife to Kristen Kish, and she did one Instagram story. And I sent our message to the PR company. I was just like, that's it? I mean, it was like nothing. I mean, it was a 0-0-0.
Yeah.
And the thing is that there's other guys like you create relationships with, and it works. I got another guy who was like all hot and bothered to post videos of using my knife. He used it for one thing, and that was it, you know? Meanwhile, I have a relationship with the guy I'm doing now, and it's an organic relationship, and it's fantastic. Use my knives all the time. Guy's got 500,000 viewers.
Yeah.
And then we did have a funny thing. I got so sick of our PR company because I was trying not to say no all the time. When you say no all the time, it gets to the point where some people just don't want to end up working with you anymore. And I was like, we're gonna do the best we can here, and I'm gonna be optimistic, and we're going to really do a good job in terms of, you know, deducting at the end of the year, and we had spreadsheets and figuring, you know, so it wasn't completely a loss. And I remember this fucking barbecue guy reviewer wanted a set of knives.
They're the worst, the barbecue guys. They're the fucking worst.
And I mean, it's all lips and assholes with those guys. You know what I'm saying? It's all lips and assholes. And all I wanted to do, and I said, look, I'm not sending a whole set of knives to these guys. Here's what you do.
Shake your brisket on the camera.
I mean, listen, we all know that the bigger the oxtail, the closer it is to the asshole. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The bigger the piece, the closer it is. And I said to the PR people, I said, look, I'm not going to be sending fucking knives every 5 minutes to anybody you want. I said, why don't we do this? Why don't we offer it as a loaner? We have a loaner set. If they want to review it, they just got to send it back.
Yeah.
People get so mad when they fucking find out it's a loner set.
Yeah.
If you want to try it out, do figure out a little cut and paste. Say it's a loner and see what happens. And all of a sudden, it ain't a review anymore.
Right.
It's a fucking loner. You send it back after you're done. That shit stops. I tell you what, that would be your move. If you say,
like
this is a loner
deposit.
We send it out. We send it to you. You can review it, and then you send it right back. See what they say.
Yeah.
Boys, you know? I got to take off. I'm sorry.
Dude.
I'm going to leave this open for you guys.
No worries. Yeah, yeah.
Have a great week. Good luck.
Thank you, guys. Good chat.
See you soon.
Yep.
Bye, everybody.
Cheers, Mareko. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That is so funny.
Yeah. Okay. Where were we?
Lips and assholes, ladies and germs.
Barbecue guys. Yes. Oh. Squeezing their briskets.
The dude was so pissed. He followed me on all of his accounts. And then as soon as he found out it was going to be a loaner set, he just fucking left me off. He was like, fuck you.
With his tight black gloves on.
Yeah, with his tight black and his stomach sticking over. They tie that tight ass apron. Their stomach is hanging over that fucking string, which is holding on for dear life. And the tighter they make it, they think it's going to make them look thinner. Meanwhile, it's like Dick Do City. You know what Dick Do is?
Dick
Do? You know what Dick Do is?
No, I don't. What's a Dick Do?
Dick Do. Dick do is when your stomach
keeps your mama happy.
Dick do is where your stomach sticks out farther than your dick do. They got that dick do.
Nice.
Those fucking Morocco, barbecue guys.
Come back.
let's just finish off these barbecue guys. And they're pushing on the meat and they're squeezing out all the juice and they're getting all fat and sexy. It's disgusting. Oh, look at this. Let me push on the meat and squeeze out some of the juice.
And wobbling it.
Oh, look at the juice. Oh, look at that jiggle. And you can tell these fucking disgusting pricks have like jerked off the night before and they're just filthy. They're all fucking horned up by the brisket. It's so disgusting. God bless you, barbecue guys, but I mean, get a grip.
Yeah, get it. Do you know who isn't disgusting?
Go ahead.
Those Broadback guys. Tell me all about them.
Oh, dude, I got a nice message from one of our listeners who thanked us for the podcast. They used Knife Talk 10 when they went to checkout at BroadbackIronworks.com, bought the mega package, used Knife Talk 10, 10% got ripped off the price, and they're thrilled with not only the product, great grinders and service, but the customer service was dynamite. So many thanks. I sent it to Ryan. Ryan is thrilled with what we're doing. We love Ryan and Ben and the guys at Broadback. And, you know, we're in it to win it with the Broadback guys.
Nice. Nice. Okay. Jamie Hulsell on Instagram. Jamie Hulsell, I think it is.
Yeah.
Says, hey, guys, I love listening to the show. It's always been inspiring and enjoyable. Can you think of any suppliers that deliver or are based in the UK? I'm particularly looking for stabilizing resins, seems scarce, and G10. Thanks in advance. Yes, give me just a second. Let me open up my tab. See,
well, while you're looking, now. I had sent him a message. Our friend Keith Colby at knifematerial.at has great G10, and he is in Austria. And he's terrific. Knifematerial.at he's an awesome guy. I like Keith. They're part of the High Carbon podcast too.
Okay. The one I used to use a lot was Ground. They used to be called Ground Flat Stock, but they're now just called GFS Knife Supplies. Guy there, I think his name is David, the guy who runs it. They were always amazing and on it. You make an order, and within 10 minutes, you get the confirmation email that they're shipping. They were always great. GFSKnifeSupplies.com. And I've been on their site for a long time, actually, because I've been over here in France. But they've got shitloads of everything you need. Yeah, gfsknifesupplies.com.
There's not a lot of people in the UK, right? I know that
supplier-wise, no. I mean, France here, you can't turn without falling over one. But in the UK, there wasn't many at all. But GFS Knife Supplies, they were great. I do remember.
I'd get a hold of Keith. Keith will take care of you. He's a good dude. Roland Shalafu says, here's an interesting bit on the interesting bit about the pricing last episode. I guess we were talking about pricing. I also struggle with this. I've been making things my whole life. I love woodworking, and as a mechanic, I use power tools. Transitioning my lifetime of earned skills into knife making has been fun and rewarding challenge. I try to keep track as a hobbyist trying to sell odd knives, and I think I'm around 20 to 30 hours in most of my completed knives. Well, that's a lot. Even if I consider myself worth $20 an hour, that's $600 plus time invested, plus materials. I've been trying to double my materials and round up to the easiest $25 to $50 increment. But as I keep getting more tools, more skills, more better finished products, I'm really questioning my pricing. Pricing is an interesting topic.
Yeah, and I think what changed a lot for me, if you're doing, like you say, you mentioned you're doing the odd knife. If you start doing batches, because then that same process, you're doing multiple times over. And that'll save you time, setting up machinery and all the rest of it. And once you're in the zone, maybe the grinding stage, you can grind up to a few that are the same and all the rest of it. So that was massive for me when I started doing that, rather than just doing one knife from beginning to completion. because yeah, I mean, you've got to make it work. And I think if you're putting those amount of hours in, you know, 20 to 30 hours per knife, you know, it's not going to be a cheap knife to buy, you know, and you know, to find customers, you know, if you're just getting into the game as well, it can be really, really difficult. Yeah, so trying to find ways of making your work more economical to make, I think batching is probably the easiest way out the gate.
Pricing anything is hard. And yeah. One of the things I think is helpful is to get out from under nickel and diming your time. And I know that it's very important, and I wish Mareko was here for this, because I know that he talks about how, you know, don't undervalue yourself, and we're all supposed to, you know, we're all relatively fragile people, and we want to make sure that we get every penny, and we don't want to be begging for sales, and we don't want to be, you know, prostituting ourselves out for, you know, whatever. But at the same time, it took me a couple of years to really, once you cover your overhead, and once you cover your materials, and once you cover everything, if you can figure out a way to get past nickel and diming every single knife, I think that you're going to find, like right now, I can only speak for myself, is when we buy steel, we buy a lot of steel. We buy wood, we buy a lot of wood. When we buy G10, we buy a lot of G10. We buy, you know, pay the rent. And I look at sales for the month. I look for sales for the week, and I don't think about I don't know how many on our website, we can see how many orders we sold per week or per month or, but it doesn't nickel and dime everything. Like, it doesn't break everything down. So I look at sales for the week, or I look at sales for the month, and it's given me the ability to be a little bit more, less sentimental on selling the work. And I had to learn this the hard way when I was a sculptor. You know, when you're an artist, art and business, it's oil and water. It's so hard for them to meet in a very comfortable position. And when you're working on art, maybe something just speaks to you in a way, or there's like a subtlety to it, or there's something you're just like, that's my favorite one that I've made. Or even knife making, you think, I can't do that again. Or that's a one in a million. Or that's the one that I just need a little bit more money for that one. It becomes this real sense of, I feel like it's a defeatist attitude. I'll tell you why. My father was still to this day, my father is one of my favorite painters. And I just think that the way he would do these landscapes, city landscapes, was just amazing. And the way he used the paintbrush and the palette knife and everything about it, I could talk about his work for a long time. And he did not want to sell his work. He didn't want, part of it was because I learned later in life, I figured out that he was afraid that he couldn't do it again. It became crippling to him that he just didn't feel as though like every piece was so important that he just didn't feel like he could do it again. Meaning he doesn't want to get rid of it because he might lose that spark. And I felt as though that was a very negative view as a creative person. And I felt as though it was important to not covet my work. I had lures that I loved. I made piles of them. I loved them. And I was, I can't sell that one. That one's too good. And I'm just like, you know what? What you're saying is you can't do it again. And that freed me up on pricing, because all of a sudden I'm just like, yeah, let's go, you know, sell it, get rid of it. I'm here for a job here. Let's keep the ball rolling. You might break even. You might make a little bit. You might not, you know, you never know. But at the same time, I think the key is to keep the ball rolling and then just to not think about it. And I think that we've gotten to the point where we're able to give nice discounts at certain times of the year. And in the beginning, it was like, I remember Tony was just like, we're going to do a 30% discount. And my stomach sank. And I thought, oh my God, it was so much work. And then the sales were the best sales we'd had in 10 years for that month. So it's like, what are we doing here? You know, I mean, it's like, what are we doing here? And it was the sales were really good. And it wasn't like we were losing money. You know, we were making money.
Yeah.
So that was the key to what I do. And off the bat, 20 to 30 hours for a knife is too much. You're spending too much time making a knife.
Yeah.
Unless you're sitting there staring while the glue dries. I don't know why. I don't know why you would, 20 to 30. Yeah. I don't know.
And that's another thing with batching. There's a lot of time when you're making a singular knife where there's nothing you can do. You're waiting on things. And again, if you're doing batches, that you can move on to the next one. And, you know, all that dead time is being used. But yeah, you'll work it out. I mean, you know, if you're only just getting into it, and you're managing to sell blades, that's the main thing. Now it's just working out how you can bring that time down, and making them of value to others.
We have about 200 knives. We just finished the heat treatment of all the steel that we have. So I have 200 knives, and between knives, forks, paring knives, all that stuff, I have about 200 units that are already heat treated, ready to be ground. They don't have handles. Yeah. They're not ready to go, but I'm able to turn around a custom so much faster now because that's the other thing. It's figuring out the efficiencies of where's my business going and what should I do in order to make it faster. Part of that is like we water jet cut some of our knives, and then that cuts down the labor by a mile. And then that allows me to also, pass on savings to my customer. Because it's not like I'm charging him $900 for a laser cut out knife. I mean, that would be, not nice. And yeah, I would rather do it. If I have an efficiency, I'd rather pass it on.
Yeah.
But right now we're actually doing prototyping for this the steak knife for this company. And the hard part is we're having to come into a budget, and I'm having to figure out ways in which to make this knife. And we were having conversations, and he was like, "Well, maybe we should do this." And I said, "Listen, every time you have a budget, where we're really coming, kind of both trying to come to the same conclusion on the price." I said, "Every time I touch this knife, it costs. So you have to figure out a way in which you can be as efficient as possible, and then reconcile a price that you decide on."
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at that.
Okay. And another way of justifying costs is to use great materials.
Look at you.
And you know what? If you want to use something very, very special, that's going to get people talking.
Go ahead.
You want to head on over to dharmasteel.se.
Have mercy.
The world's greatest stainless Damascus.
No question.
Beautiful, beautiful patterns. People are making awesome stuff with it. And you know what? It's a bit easier to use than you'd think. It's really, really, really good stuff. Have a look on their website, dharmasteel.se. You can see the patterns they've got. They've got great sort of information on them as well of, how to use it and that kind of thing. There's also a tab on there for the Chef Invitational, which is the DCI, which we do every year with them. And that's it's almost like a coming together of everybody uses Dharmasteel. But you will see there some of the beautiful stuff people are making. And again, on their Instagram, you will too. Dharmasteel, Dharmasteel AB on Instagram. People are even making jewellery with this stuff. It's really, really special stuff. Head on over, dharmasteel.se. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Go take a look.
All right, listen. I'm making an executive decision. We're not going to do another question nor feedback. We are going... No. Mareko's not here, so we're going to do some weird news.
Okay. I love it.
We do a little weird news. So, guys, every so often, I dip into the Ben Snur weird news, the weird news drawer from Full Blast Podcast, and I'm gonna give you some weird news stories, and you tell me if you want them. Ready?
Okay, go for it.
First one is: I needed a break. Man gives up city life to live as a goat in the Swiss mountains.
I mean, I need to know more. Need to know more. Is his name Billy? Please tell me his name.
Okay,
Billy.
Okay, my man, a UK man wanted to see.
Oh, wow.
Wanted to see if the grass was really greener on the other side. Thomas Thwaites decided to temporarily trade in the stressful life as a human being, to see if living as a goat in the Swiss mountains would be an improvement.
Jesus.
When I first had the idea, a lot of people called me crazy, but I was fed up.
Why would they do that, Thomas?
But they thought I was crazy. I was I needed a break. I was fed up with my life and I needed a break. I was jobless and I had a lot of personal problems. And I found everyday life so stressful. This is amazing. I like these. Listen, I was jobless and I had a hard time. While on a walk with a friend and his dog, he noticed that the dog seemed really happy about life without any worries. And I thought to myself, how great would it be for you to be that way for a day? A dog's life was good, except Thwaites didn't want to eat meat. So he considered... So he considered living as other species, including elephants. But he realized that the giant creatures seem to have the same problems we do. They get sad, they get upset, and they can't even suffer from post-traumatic stress. That's exactly the sort of thing I was trying to get away from. See, guys, the elephants have it worse than we do. Goats, on the other hand, seem to have more of a leisurely life. So he applied for a university grant to study goat psychology. To live as a four-legged creature, the researcher enlisted the help of a prosthetics clinic in Manchester to create goat legs. So,
what a prick.
So he could bounce around the Alps on all fours while the experts from the University of Aberystwyth designed a goat's stomach, which he strapped onto his waist. I could strap the bag onto my torso and spit chewed up grass into one of my openings.
One of his openings.
And suck the cultured microbes and volatile fatty acids out of the other opening like a milkshake. So I could digest them through my true stomach and live off grass in the Alps like a goat.
Oh, my God. What was this reported on? What was the...
This is the Toronto Sun. But Thwaites also, who chronicled his adventures in the 2016 book Goat Man, How I Took a Holiday from Being a Real Human, struggled with having to eat grass, and the slope caused him to constantly fall over.
On his shitty legs, yeah. So they made it.
Also... Yes, also the goats didn't seem to like me very much. Sometimes I thought they were really trying to attack me. and they had really particularly dangerous horns, he noted. But I later realized that they were just letting me know that there was a hierarchy and I should know my place.
Thomas.
Thwaites said that was the end of his experiment on one of his takeaways. And goats are much better. Goats are better people. They live much more in the moment than we do and show us that we really do need to learn a little bit about a relaxed life. While his time as a goat is over, he acknowledged the animals do indeed have a hard life and need to fight for existence. He added, every day is tough. And that's something... Just as part of being alive. That was a good one.
Thinking the grass is always greener.
I mean, you know what the best part is? Is now he's acting like a professor. But before all this, Before this, he had no job, miserable. Now all of a sudden, he's Professor Goat,
strapping on these false legs.
Yeah. And his fucking two opening
extra holes.
So the move was he would take a bite of the grass, spit it into one of his openings, and then he would get the juice out of the other opening.
The whole thing sucks.
So congratulations.
Bring back bullying. That's what I'm
saying. Oh boy, here's next one. We got to do one. We got enough for one more. Here's one for you. Man who makes 20,000 pounds a year from his farts says he's blown away by the demand.
Nice.
You can do that.
Yes.
Or man who burnt thumb while cooking, shocked to wake up and find both legs need to be amputated.
That one.
Oh, by the way, I've been you got me into red-handed the podcast. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They are petty. The two of them are very petty.
Yes.
Last week we cut off and Craig was telling me at a podcast to listen to it was called Red Handed, and they were talking about this woman who pretended to be in 9/11.
In the towers.
But
yeah,
it was the most petty thing because she didn't take any money, and they acted as if she was Osama bin Laden.
It was pretty bad.
They made it seem like she was the one who crashed into the towers.
Not quite.
Yeah, I mean, that was crazy. All right, so yeah. A man who burned his thumb while cooking, shocked to wake up and find both legs needed to be amputated.
The guy's name is
Max Armstrong.
Not so much leg strong.
Mark Max Armstrong's meal ended up costing him his legs. A man was told his horror after what he thought was a minor burn on his thumb led to him losing both legs. Max Armstrong spent 6 days in a coma following a near-fatal incident that he had while camping with his pals in Colorado back in December. The 40-year-old headed out into the wilderness for a week and with his friends for fun when he burned his thumb while cooking pasta. I grabbed the skillet the wrong, and my thumb touched the hot part. I could feel it burning, and it was moving as I moved it to the table, but I didn't want to drop it. I didn't think much of it, and I've gotten burns before living outdoors and being outside. After finishing up cooking, he cleaned his wound before bandaging it up. And then a couple days later, Armstrong began to notice one of his legs started to swell up. He initially brushed it off and didn't think about it, that the pain was that significant. He believed it might be he hurt his ankle at some point. However, by December 7th, he had been packing. He packed his tent up and called it a day. I decided to head home, and my buddy suggested we go to the hospital. At that point, my toenails started turning purple, and the swelling had increased. Baffled by why his limbs were swelling up, at this point, the burn on my thumb had become pretty ugly, and it turned black, and it looked like it was eating away at my thumb. As he sat down to discuss the bizarre symptoms with the doctors, the business owner explained that his eyes began rolling back in his head, and he began talking nonsense. The medics realized that he had strep A bacteria had infiltrated the burn on his thumb, and he quickly developed into sepsis, which can be life-threatening if not properly treated. Armstrong was transported to a facility to suit his needs. The doctor placed him into an induced coma for 6 days. And his loved ones. All right, so this wasn't as funny as the goat one.
No, because there's no happy ending here. Jeez,
so,
Max.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Oh, Jesus, they cut his fucking legs off.
Oh, can you imagine waking up and like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You get up to go for a piss and you just fall on the floor.
I don't think it's immediately I don't think you immediately realize you don't have legs.
People say they can still feel their legs.
Do you honestly think that when somebody comes out of a coma, they just like hop up in bed and then they're just ready for a whiz? Let's go for a walk.
It's been 3 months. I need a piss.
They walk up and then it's all stump time. all right, let's redeem that one.
But you know what? If I wanted to chop my legs off and I needed a really sharp knife, do you know how I'd sharpen that knife?
tell me, Jeff. Tell me, Craig. You started this bit. Jesus. What I would do is I eat some grass, spit into my opening. Hopefully.
I'd obviously need a Tomek sharpened knife for it to be that sharp. If you're sharpening knives, and I'm sure most of you are, you need a Tomek. Keep it simple. These water wheels, they're super easy to use. There's like jigs and stuff as well, so you can set your angle, set and forget. Repeatable edges. So whether you're doing batches or whatever you're doing, get your angle set, you're ready to go. Super simple to use, and they'll be razor sharp. Get yourself a Tomek.
All right, I'm going to give you a choice, and then, or we can just... you know, have a little after show. This is kind of after show. All right. Delta, we have frozen excrement dropped out of planes, crashed through a house roof.
You're shitting me.
There we go. And then there are people who prefer a threesome with a robot over a human. Gangsters steal a bridge in India.
Let's go for the shit.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Stephanie Moore said she was woken by a lump of blue ice that crashed through the ceiling of 15 feet from her head. A Canadian woman was claimed a frozen lump of excrement from a plane passing overhead, ripped through the roof of her mother's house. Stephanie Moore said she was woken up by this crashing sound and saw a huge hole in the ceiling less than 15 feet from where she was sleeping. The 36-year-old teacher had been staying with her mother overnight after returning from a trip from Cuba. After the incident, she found this pink insulation, drywall, ceiling material, and shattered bits of roof on the wood on the hallway floor and a puddle of water. In the morning daylight, she could see shining through the hole. She could be seen shining through the hole, which was around a meter in diameter, and the crash had caused damage to the roof's planking and shingles. At first, I thought it was just damage from the ceiling, but I could tell right, and I could see it right through the roof. She said both the insurance appraiser and the roof repairman who visited the next day said it was the strangest thing they'd ever seen. The roofer who inspected the damage said that there was no rotting wood in the roof, and therefore the outer shell of the house was solid. They didn't come to any evidence that a tree or branch caused the damage. There was no ice or snow from the roof when it happened. The roofer said most likely it was blue ice, a term for frozen excrement that can accidentally leak from planes mid-flight, named for the color of the disinfectant used by the sewage system in the commercial planes. Blue ice has been known to hit homes and melt on impact, leaving little evidence behind. The only thing that could cause that sort of damage would be a small meteor strike. But that would leave a rock or a mineral in the debris.
So this is a big block of frozen shit.
Yeah, blue. So I guess it leaks out. A spokeswoman for Transport Canada said that they were looking into the claim. The department takes all reports of possible debris coming from the aircraft very seriously. Every reported incident is investigated. Canadian aviation regulations forbid creating a hazard by dropping waste mid-flight, she said. So, Jesus. I don't fucking, you know, we had just had a sewage issue. Every 4 years we have a sewage issue. And I would think that if you just found this giant hole in your roof and it smelled like shit and urine, who would know what it is? I mean, you would never think that, you know, somebody's porta potty came crashing through in your roof.
Do you know what? If you're Canadian and you want good shit delivered to your house, where would you go, Jack?
Maritime Knife Supply, ladies and germs. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com for all your belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. Support our man Lawrence Lake. He's gonna get you right. And if you're in Canada and you're not using a Maritime Knife Supply, shame on you. And if you're in the United States, they have products ready to ship, ready to go for you. The website's all squared away to make sure that you get the right thing, all you need. Go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Nice job.
None of that blue ice.
He's got blue ice. He's got the yellow razor stars, but no blue ice, ladies and gentlemen. And when you get one of them Norton yellow razor stars, you're gonna be ripping. You're gonna be ripping.
Ripping.
So funny.
Is that a show, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
That's a show. Hour and a half. What more do they want?
Blood? They want blood?
Blood, sweat, and tears. Right, thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you again next week. If you've got questions for us, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Send them through. Audio questions, we love. Or even if you're just coming funny to tell us, let us know. Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. And with that, we shall speak to you next week. Bye for now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.